Good morning. Welcome, everyone, to today's oral arguments. I am Judge Sanchez, and with me is my colleague, Judge Thomas. And together, we want to welcome Judge Liberty, who's visiting us from the District of Arizona, and thank Judge Liberty for taking time out of his busy schedule to come join us for these arguments with
us. My pleasure. Thank you.
So I want to remind counsel that we have read the briefs carefully and are familiar with the arguments. So please focus your attention on the most pertinent points and let me know if you have any rebuttal time that you'd like to reserve. We have a couple of cases that have been submitted for oral argument. One of them is Decathlon USA LLC versus HSC Associates, case number 24-708, and then Lynch versus Matterport, case number 23-4281. There are a few case numbers. And we have two arguments set for argument. The first one is Alberto Calderon versus Bondi, case number 24-2619. And counsel may approach.
It's Nikhil Shah for the petitioner, Luis Alberto Calderon. I'd like to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal at the end.
Okay.
There are two issues in this case. The first issue is whether the immigration judge abused his discretion in denying a continuance to the petitioner to present arguments regarding whether he was a spouse for purposes of special rule cancellation for battered spouses, and if he was allowed to go ahead and present expert testimony from a family law expert as to the issue, and also have a psychologist testify as he was being subjected to extreme cruelty at the time by his ex-partner. The petitioner asserts that the immigration judge did abuse his discretion in denying a continuance because this was the first time that the office had actually asked for a continuance. This was the first time that the judge actually brought up the issue of potentially the annulment barring him from relief at the hearing in 2019. And the continuance that we asked was reasonable. When we asked the judge for a continuance, he came up with his own procedure wherein he said, Mrs. Shah, I'll compromise with you. I'm going to issue an order denying cancellation strictly on this one narrow issue. If you come up with a case that tells you that there's some wiggle room on the issue and not in the context you're talking about, where it's a factual issue as to whether fraud was committed or not, but something where there's some wiggle room on the term spouse, to the extent whose marriage was annulled, could still be considered a spouse under the statute, and other than the way it's described in the statute, I'll reopen the case.
This is counsel, part of the Sure. Just as a preliminary question, the case was continued, it seemed, several times over the course of several years. What was the cause of that?
So, Your Honor, this judge in particular has his own procedures where he actually goes off the record and he continues it on his own. So all of the master hearings were continued by the judge on his own because he had a very busy calendar, and this was not on the record. If you look at the record, it goes from 2013, the transcripts, to 2019. He always has off the record discussions with counsels, and he tells us, this is what we would like from you, and he would keep continuing them because of his busy schedule. And he only brought this issue up in the last hearing, and he didn't give us an opportunity. He actually said that he was going to issue an order of removal, and then we would be able to submit a motion to reopen to him within 90 days.
Well, let me ask this, because it seems to me that the continuance issue seems less relevant than what seems to, at least for me, to be a question of law. And that is it the case, is the IJ and the BIA correct that California law treats annulments as void ab initio in all circumstances? And I have read through many of these cases that suggest to me that it does not, and that the BIA might have erred in its interpretation of California law.
Well, that was the second issue in this case, Your Honor. I agree with the BIA where they actually said that the term spouse is not defined in the INA. And if you look at the dissenting opinion by Judge Brown at the BIA, they do mention that this should be considered on a case-by-case basis because they cited a case also which said that if injustice would result, then basically that should be factored into the test. And these are complex issues of family law, and there is an issue of a continuance here because these aren't issues that are very apparent on its face. I think a family law expert would have actually been able to go ahead and put in his expertise as to the issue. In the court itself, in Umanzar versus Gonzalez, found that Oral testimony by experts is important, and even the case that we cited in our brief, Your Honor.
But I understand the point is your expert would have been able to elucidate what California law says about these issues. And I take your point, you know, case-by-case analysis does seem to be the BIA's precedent. But just circle back with me to this issue of California law. There's a California Supreme Court named Sefton.
Yes, sir.
Which is the most recent Supreme Court decision on it that says sometimes annulments are void ab initio, and other times they're not. They're not given that retroactive effect. If that's the case, what should the board have done here in light of that law?
I think that I agree with the dissenting opinion that they should have remanded and considered this on a case-by-case basis, because I do understand that these are not things that are specific to one case or the other. And then in this case, the issue was also the annulment was tied with the abuse. So in some cases, the annulments may be an independent thing from an abuse, but in this case, we were asserting that the annulment and the abuse were tied together. And I think that that factor was not considered by the immigration judge, and that was something we were going to brief to him.
On this record that the annulment was tied to the abuse? And I would just note that your client, the husband, was claiming that there was abuse of him, yet it was the wife who sought the annulment.
Yes, Your Honor. And we were going to actually present, we didn't get a chance to present the testimony, but we were going to go ahead and show that that was done in retaliation to the petitioner issuing a restraining order against him. And if you actually look at the record, there is when the petitioner's wife confronted the petitioner's ex-employer at his work demanding to know about his whereabouts, she actually identified herself as his spouse. This was on the administrative record, page 684. So she actually considered herself his spouse when it was convenient to her.
What significance, if any, should we give to the fact that your client defaulted on the marriage, the dissolution of marriage petition?
Yes, Your Honor. If you look at the record, too, we submitted a psychological evaluation. And in the psychological evaluation, the psychologist diagnosed my client with having PTSD. This was actually on the record, page 540. He stated that the petitioner spends more time looking at how others may be perceiving him rather than trusting in how he feels about himself. This is part of the administrative record on page 541. If you look at someone who is a victim of psychological abuse, it is understandable to know that that person may not want to confront his ex-wife, especially since she had threatened him physically, harmed him physically with a knife. He feared for his life, and that was very reasonable for him to not show up for his annulment hearing.
So I guess what you're asking is you believe that you should have been given the opportunity to put forward evidence as to whether the agency should have given some sort of retroactive effect to the annulment itself.
Yes, Your Honor.
For immigration purposes.
Yes.
And that's consistent with matter of Astorga.
Yes, Your Honor, we do think that it is consistent with matter of Astoria, and also the case that I was going to cite to McDonald versus Gonzalez, we cited to it in the brief too. Expert testimony would have been vital. In that case, the court found that the state prosecutor's expert opinion regarding mens rea about unlawful voting was vital in deciding some of these complex issues, because these are issues out of the control of both the Petitioner's Immigration Council and the Department of Homeland Security, and an expert would have weighed in one way or the other, but we weren't given a chance to go ahead and even have a full and complete record.
But the BIA did cite matter of Astorga in its decision.
They did, Your Honor, but so did the dissenting opinion, I think, was more persuasive. The BIA did cite to the opinion, but they didn't factor the other factors that we mentioned about abuse into it. They just looked at a very straightforward statutory interpretation without looking at it on a case-by-case basis.
Okay. Do you have any other arguments, or do you want to...
Yes, Your Honor. The issue in the case, we've talked about the continuance. So the other issue is about whether the petitioner was a spouse or special rule cancellation. The fact that the petitioner's wife annulled the marriage while she was abusing the petitioner should have been a factor. The BIA did cite matter of Magana, where it says that these things should be analyzed if injustice would result at the end. The Ninth Circuit also, we cited to this in the reply brief, In Purganyan versus Swiker, they came up with a complementary rule within the context of Social Security benefits where it did allow for a retroactive application of finding that there was a valid marriage, even though the marriage was later annulled. And we did, we just also wanted to clarify on the issue, and I think that the judge brought this up on the record partially and also off the record, but the fraud requirements also for California and for immigration purposes are very different. And for California, fraud could just be something about as simple as a spouse not wanting to live with the other spouse, a spouse not wanting to have a child with the other spouse, or a spouse just not wanting to be faithful to the other spouse. But for immigration, the courts have looked at the issue of marriage and what constitutes a good faith marriage, and they haven't found one particular rule, and that's very understandable, but they said that the main rule should be what the parties intended to do at the time of their marriage. This was set out by Bark, and it's been reiterated by the court in other decisions. The court also in Damon versus Ashcroft, again, reaffirmed that there's no one particular rule, but they did say look at other factors to determine if a good faith marriage existed. Evidence showing that the spouse and partner courted each other for several weeks before marrying, they had a wedding ceremony, they shared finances in a joint bank account together, they lived together. The petitioner and his ex-partner did all of these things, and as we mentioned, she actually identified herself specifically as his spouse. The BIA and
when did she?
It's a part of the administrative record on page 684. Mm-hmm. It was the manager of Drinks Restaurant gave a declaration where he said that she came looking for the petitioner and demanded to know about his whereabouts, and she identified herself as his spouse.
Okay.
And neither the BIA nor the immigration judge considered the psychological factors or even allowed the psychologist to bring in his opinion regarding emotional abuse and manipulation. The court in Dillard found that abusive spouses are known to manipulate the abused spouse, and there's like a cycle where they do use things such as annulment against them if they know that they can teach them a lesson, if they can no longer control them. None of these factors were brought in when the immigration judge denied the continuance. And I also wanted to bring up the issue of the continuance. When the immigration judge denied the case and said that we had 90 days to submit a motion to reopen, what the immigration judge failed to consider was with his busy calendar, the petitioner would not have received an automatic stay of removal. That would only be for in absentia orders. So if we had done the procedure that he advocated, he would still have been vulnerable to the Immigration and Customs Enforcement detaining him and removing him prior to the motion to reopen. He would have had to rule on a stay, which with his busy calendar could have taken a month or two. When the BIA failed to give us a decision, failed to mail the decision to my address or the petitioner's address, and we didn't even know that his BIA case had been denied, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement actually did come looking for the petitioner, which is why I found out that the case had been denied, and which led to me requesting that they reissue the decision, as you can see, as part of the record.
Which they did, I believe, right?
Yes, but we had to file an emergency a motion to reissue the decision, use our one motion option for that, and we were actually planning to get a motion to reopen for an expert. So whatever the BIA did also compromised on the petitioner's appellate rights to do a motion to reopen. But it would have, this was a very dangerous option that the immigration judge set forth, where it would have left him open to being removed.
Can you just tell me succinctly, what is the test that you think we should apply for relation back? Is it the test from the Sefton case, or is it something else?
I do think that it should be a test on a case-by-case basis. I don't think that the court has really, this is a novel issue, so I don't think that there is a particular test. Maybe the test may be set forth in Damon versus Ashcroft, just doing it on a case-by-case basis, especially since abusers are likely to use annulment as a weapon against the person that they're abusing. And I think that that should be a factor taken into consideration.
Okay. We'll reserve the rest of your time.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
We'll reserve the rest of your time.
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court, Lauren Tacklett on behalf of the Attorney General. The Board's interpretation of spouse, grounded in the text and structure of the statute, is the best reading of the statute and should be entitled to due respect under Loper-Bright. The plain meaning of spouse requires a legal marriage, and the interpretation of spouse for federal law purposes should be informed by state law according to the rules of construction at Chapter 1, Section 7 of the U.S. Code.
Okay, but here it seems that the BIA just gets state law wrong, because the BIA says that under California law, judgment of nullity renders a marriage void from its inception, and that's just not correct. California looks at the public policy purposes when determining whether or not the marriage was void from its inception or is voidable. So.
Your Honor, I would highly point to cases such as Marriage of Garcia, which is a 2017 California appellate court stating void ab initio. And also I would point to the other cases in our brief, such as the matter of Simonetti.
Also you have a judgment. The Superior Court entered judgment that the marriage was void.
Correct.
That's correct. And in part because the petitioner didn't appear to contest it.
Correct.
Okay. So when we're reading these cases involving whatever this Seifert balancing, Sefton balancing test, whatever we want to call it, it seems to me it's usually in these collateral proceedings, right? So in Sefton, it involved a spouse who wanted to reactivate spousal maintenance. Okay. So I guess what I'm saying is, wouldn't this be a collateral proceeding? That's my word for it.
Yes, I understand. And I think it's important here to note that petitioner never challenged the effect of the California annulment. He challenged whether or not California should have granted an annulment in these proceedings, which would not be appropriate. But he never actually challenged that the effect of California annulment is that it's void ab initio, which is what the immigration judge was reliant upon, and therefore this type of argument would be unexhausted to this court
This is my concern with this is Sefton's the most recent California Supreme Court case on the matter. Matter of Garcia cited to a Millar case from 1917. And it talks about how there are exceptions to the relation back doctrine. So in my view, it's not just about whether the marriage has been nullified, but whether it's been nullified ab initio, as if it had never existed. And in that sense, the state courts seem to apply it on a case-by-case basis. So if that was the premise by which the IJ and BIA started from, that seems to be an erroneous interpretation of California law. And what do we do with that?
My understanding, first of all, is that Sefton is stating the exception, not the rule. It acknowledges that the general premise is we understand a annulment is void ab initio.
But even if it's an exception, that means it's not categorical, which is what the BIA said. The BIA said in all instances, void ab initio. And so Sefton clearly disproves that.
I respectfully disagree, but assuming the board did get California
wrong. Well, then what does the exception language in Sefton mean in your view then? How can you square it being categorically void ab initio, but there being exceptions at the same time?
I believe I'm reliant upon the more recent, my understanding is that Sefton is from 1955, and I'm relying upon the more recent state appellate courts, Supreme Court.
But there are also California appellate courts like Matter of Seton that are more recent I think that was 2011. There are a number of other cases that have also recognized this more nuanced, I guess, context for this California law.
If the board got California law wrong, I think it's still within this court's purview to acknowledge that it correctly interpreted the INA as the definition of spouse should be dependent upon the state law treatment, if it got California law wrong, we could remand for the purposes of reconsidering under the appropriate California standard. However,
can I ask you this? I'm sorry to interrupt, but it seems that there's another problem that I had with the board's decision, and that it didn't follow Matter of Astorga, which says once upon a time the board just followed the state law determination of annulment, but now we look at things on a case-by-case basis to see whether to relate back for immigration purposes. And it cites a number of cases like Castillo-Sedano and Wang and others and Matter of Magana. So it seems like the board also was incorrect in its statement of its own prior precedent. You know, that even if it cites Matter of Astorga, it wasn't actually doing a totality of the circumstances analysis in this case. So in my view, when the board doesn't follow its own precedent, we send it back in order to do so in the first instance again.
The board's prior cases actually support its reading of the statute here, and I would point to one, Matter of Astorga reiterates that general principle of validity of marriages are coming from state law, and then relates an annulment back because, in part because that's what the state law does. I also would point to, again, Matter of Semedi, which is, you know, categorical in saying the relation back doctrine applies to all annulments in California, irrespective of the ground. The result of the decree is the, you know, no marriage ever existed, and then revokes adjustment of status based on that determination. And in relation to the cases that you were citing, in respect to Matter of Wong, Matter of Magana, mm-hmm. I would point out that in those cases, they are visa petitions, and the non-citizen is attempting to benefit from the annulment, not benefit from the marriage here. We're looking at a different statutory context, so we're looking at the VAWA, cancellation of removal, as opposed to visa petitions. And here, the petitioner is trying to benefit from the marriage, not benefit from the annulment. And it would seem wrong.
Well, can you explain, what do you mean by that, trying to benefit from the marriage from and not the annulment?
So here, petitioner is reliant, his entire case is reliant upon the idea that he was married at the time of the abuse.
Yes.
In the other cases, Matter of Magana, Matter of Wong, these types of cases, their claim is that they were not married based on the fact of the annulment.
Right.
And the board there, well, INS there is going back and saying, no, you were married at the time. We're not going to allow you to lie now and say you weren't married because you subsequently got an annulment.
Right. But, exactly right. I think that's correct. And that's why I think Astorga, which postdated Semedi, for example, right, and sort of charted a different path, that's why the BIA has said, let's take this on a case-by-case basis and analyze what the immigration effects would be and whether it, you know, carries out an injustice or there are other immigration policies at issue here. And I just don't see the board having done so in this instance.
And that was appropriate in this instance because the statute is limiting on the types of relationships that qualify. So very specifically, if you look at subsection 3 that discusses putative marriages based on bigamy, that is Congress limiting the board's ability to recognize a relationship that has been terminated. Congress, you know, in fact, actually, this is pretty important. The petitioner cites a 1997 INS memo in their brief, and that statute at the time, it says perhaps you can get cancellation of removal because it is more broad than adjustment of status, any terminated relationship. However, after 1997, in 2000, that is when Congress added the limiting provision in terms of putative spouses due to bigamy.
My apologies for interrupting you, because this is a question I've been waiting to ask you, is do you think that the congressional amendments in the 1990s had any effect on the application of these earlier cases decided in the 1970s, what I'm particularly referring to are the BIA's decisions from the 1970s.
I would point out that, yes, the statute here, I can't speak to what the statute said in relation to the visa petition context in the 1970s, but the statute here at issue
That was the focus of my question.
Yes, exactly. Ahead. That is limiting to the board's ability to consider these kind of case-by-case analyses, because it could result in spouse meaning different things in different times, in different cases, and the meaning of a word in the statute should be consistent across cases.
And you raise an interesting point, because what if California law's definition of spouse is different from Alabama's law? And then would that be a problem to have inconsistent application of Section 1229B in different parts of the United States?
It would be consistent application with respect to, we are defining it based on state law, however the states have defined their marriage. And that is what Chapter 1, Section 7 contemplates in the U.S. Code when it says that the marriage will be valid based on the state.
Let me see if I understand your argument. I had been meaning to ask this as well. Is it your view under special rule cancellation that Congress has decided that all annulments, regardless of state law, are void ab initio, or that Congress wanted courts to still, and the agency to still, look to state law to see whether there's a valid marriage and then find exceptions within that?
My understanding is that Congress limited the board's ability to look through the details of an annulment by limiting the types of relationships here that would be valid, i.e. only those.
I'm not sure. So does Congress consider an annulled marriage void ab initio in all circumstances, in your view?
In my view, it would be dependent on how the state law treats the annulment based on, again, 1-7.
Okay. Because, I mean, the bigamy example is an interesting one, but you sort of have to back end it into this assumption that because that bigamy exception exists, that means annulments mean void ab initio, right? I mean, and now you're telling me that it's not necessarily the case, that it would be state by state. So I guess the problem I have a little bit with that interpretation is that the special rule cancellation isn't just about spouses, right? It also protects alien children. And so it has other protective features that aren't just about the status of a marriage. And so it's hard for me to see, in the absence of something more explicit, why Congress would say in an old marriage, no one can get VAWA protection if you've been abused unless you were in a bigamous relationship.
Congress's, the purpose was to extend relief to victims of abuse, but Congress did not open the floodgates to everyone. It was very specific in the types of relationships that it was considering eligible, and Congress is allowed to draw those lines. Perhaps it's the idea that...
I mean, of course it's allowed, but what in the statutory text tells us that Congress intended annulled marriages, those subject to an annulled marriage, to be outside of the bounds of VAWA protection unless it involved an annulment based on bigamy. I agree that there's that protection for bigamy. It just doesn't follow, especially when Congress hasn't defined spouse, that the premise begins that way.
I read subsection 3 as showing that Congress considered the messy factual situations that may arise in this context. And it was being very specific that we only want to extend the protections of VAWA to a very specific subset. And that is the reading that the board decided on, and that is a best reading of the statute given that limiting provision.
So let me ask you this. Suppose you had a state decree that annuls a marriage but is not void ab initio. So that's the state determination is that. And it's not based on bigamy. Would a petitioner be entitled to VAWA protection in that circumstance under your reading of the statute?
If that such a order would exist, I think that would therefore be acting like a divorce, how we generally conceive of divorce. And in this case, divorce would mean that there was a marriage that ended, and as long as the abuse occurred during that valid marriage, yes, they would be entitled to VAWA.
So in some ways, it all circles back to how the state law determines this issue to some extent. And the facts of that case?
Yes.
Okay. Let me see. Do my colleagues have any other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One of this is a very unique case. One of the things that was done in this case was we weren't given the actual BIA decision until the certified administrative record was filed. Our office did attempt to actually get a family law expert to do a motion to reopen to the BIA, but because of what transpired in the case on the record.
Counsel, can I ask you to respond to government counsel's arguments about how to interpret VAWA and what was Congress's intent in creating this bigamy exception, for example, and the effect of annulments in cases?
Yes. And it actually ties in, Your Honor. So I'm going to get to the congressional intent in a second, but the family law expert that was going to testify was actually going to discuss California law in general and even talk about potential options that the petitioner had to fix the annulment issue. And we were compromised on that just because of the way the BIA issued the decision and us rushing to having to use the one motion rule to file a motion to reissue the decision.
I get why don't you answer my question? Because
yes.
You have limited time.
Yes. And the other, so the issue is that congressional intent does seem vague when I look at it. It seems that it would be odd that they were trying to protect victims of physical abuse as well as severe psychological trauma or emotional abuse. It would seem odd that they would want to go ahead and foreclose someone whose spouse was using the annulment as a weapon against him to not be considered applicable for that relief, especially since it follows the pattern with Haggard of emotional abuse.
So in your view, has Congress taken away some discretion from the board in order to look at these cases, or is it still under the 1970s decisions supposed to look at this on a case-by-case perspective?
We do believe that it still would be on a case-by-case basis. It would just be in keeping with the intention of the act.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you, Counselor.
Of course.
Thank you both for your helpful arguments. The matter will stand submitted.